As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. Cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Wednesday afternoon here in the DMV, and I have got a fantastic episode for you here. Two guests for you. First up, NFL insider Ian Rappaport. Of course, you know Ian from the NFL Network, NFL.com, and at Rap Sheet on Twitter. Ian and I discussed a few minutes ago various topics on the Commanders. What is the league? How is the league viewing the Commanders now that the Josh Harris era has really kicked in following the draft, free agency, not to mention the GM and coaching hires? We talk a lot about Jaden Daniels. What was the perception around the league as to where Jaden Daniels fit in relative to Caleb Williams and Drake May? What did he make of the quiet that surrounded the Commanders? And what does that look like from his end as somebody who's talking to the whole league when we say they're keeping things quiet? What does that look like from his perspective? And then we also talked about a cause that is something that he mentioned the other day on Twitter that I do find important, and that is having to do with limiting access for young children, you know, middle school, elementary school, what have you, in terms of social media and having a fully fledged smartphone. And we also tied that into how these young people who many of, you know, some of whom become NFL players, how is the social media affecting them? Our team, what do teams say with regards to what changes they've seen in these prospects over time because of social media and phones, et cetera? So an informative conversation, and really appreciate Ian's time for that chat. Then speaking of the draft, Mikey Sanderstil, second round pick from Michigan, joined me this week as well. We got to know him a little bit better, primarily through Dane Brugler's draft evaluation in his, you know, epic draft guide. We went through Mikey's bio, his strengths and some weaknesses, and just got his view of what Dane had to say. What did he think about it? And really interesting young man. So I was excited to talk to him as well. So we'll get to all that and more here on the Standing Room Only podcast. Make sure you subscribe, of course, on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you do your podcasting. And appreciate those who subscribe to The Athletic. I wrote this week I focused on eight topics that either topics to reflect on following all the transactional part of the season, or things to consider going forward. Like, for example, what about contract extensions for Sam Cosmi and John Allen? Which of the UDFAs could stand out for Washington this summer? Some stock up, some stock down, and a bunch more. So make sure you check out all that on The Athletic. And always, you know, check out the podcast here. We've had a slate of great guests throughout and more to come in the days ahead. All right, before I get to Ian and Mikey, I wanted to just sort of, like, you know, there's so many questions with this roster right now. And part of it is, and I say questions, I don't necessarily mean good or bad, just different, because there's been such massive turnover. And, you know, Over the Cap put out a couple of interesting tweets this week regarding that. In terms of the players returning to their team from 2023, the Commanders have the lowest percentage at 57% returning. That is even just among the top 10 teams. That's significantly behind some of the other teams picking at the bottom of that top 10 list. Again, we're not surprised by that per se, but because we've been living this, we know that they had over 20 new free agents come in, mostly on 1-year deals, but just try to help stabilize this team, get it back to a credible position. And then, of course, 9 draft picks, the UDFAs as well. So this was a good reminder just how much they've changed. The other reminder, and I don't have this one stat in front of me, but it said the Commanders also had the most percentage of players on the roster last year not currently on a offseason roster right now. Now, that number will likely change over time as we get closer to the season because there are some viable players still available around the league. But it also goes to show, you know, how collectively we all probably overestimated the roster, although in some cases, you know, I do think the coaching staff played a role in maybe why some players are being viewed maybe a little bit more negatively or harshly than perhaps they should be. But as we get into the rookie minicamp, which leads into the OTAs, which leads into the mandatory minicamp, it is just a reminder about how things have changed here on this roster. Not just Jaden Daniels as a new quarterback or Johnny Newton or whatever, it is changes all over the place. I think there's basically like 12 or 13 week one players coming back from last year. This is, it's a new day here to say the least. And we're really finally going to see some of that in terms of on-field workouts over the next few days. We will be out there meaning we, the media, Friday and Saturday for rookie camp. I will have at least one podcast following all that. So again, make sure you subscribe so you do not miss a thing. All right, I don't want to mess around here too much with these guests coming up, so we'll just get into it. Again, first up, Ian Rappaport from NFL Network, and then second round pick Mikey Sanders, still the 50th player overall in the draft, selected by the Commanders, a guy that Nick Saban said pound for pound probably the best player in this draft class, and a guy who I've heard nothing but praise from other teams who didn't get him, who said that, boy, they really like that kid a lot. We're definitely considering him, at some point when their turn was up. So we'll get to something to keep in mind, but we'll get to both of them right now, starting with Ian Rappaport here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. I think the other day I lied. I think I said we're putting a bow on the NFL draft stuff. Well, not exactly, because, you know, I have a guest here today, Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network, who knows a lot of things, and I'm not going to waste the opportunity to discuss that. We're also going to talk about a social media cause he's behind involving keeping kids, younger kids, off of social media. We'll get to that in a moment. First off, though, Ian, thanks for doing this. Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely, man. Happy to be here. What's going on?
You know, there's always something going on with this team, but I will say this is the first time. It's certainly the first time in this calendar year we've had to take a breath, because it was obviously they fired Ron Rivera, brought in Peters. The coaching search was interesting. They signed more free agents than anybody. They have a draft, the number two pick that they take a quarterback, all the stuff. But really, honestly, going back to 2020, it's really the first time since that summer that we've been able to take a pause. So it's a little bit weird. I'm trying to figure this out. But it's good. We're happy. It's good to be in the news. But I am curious, from your perspective, you talk to everybody around the league, other than the fact that it's not Snyder anymore, what have people been thinking about this organization and how they've kind of gone about their business?
Well, I think not Snyder anymore is not an insignificant part of this, because, being able to, the Commanders should be a flagship franchise, and they really should be. They should be in the nation's capital. They should be a organization that is unbelievably marketable, with a good, clean, solid name, and, all of the things that the league and fans should be able to celebrate. And it has been quite a while since that time. The fact that they are kind of getting back, they are at least getting their feet under. I mean, I think that's probably where, say, like, what does the league think of this team? That's sort of what it seems like, is that it is now, sort of setting the foundation for being just a good regular team. How good will they be? I have no idea. next year might be a tough year. I think that's probably fair to say. It's a first year of a new regime. You're going to have a rookie quarterback who, you know, maybe starting, probably starting. You have a whole bunch of new free agents that were, you know, I know important signing, but really more like upper mid-level guys as opposed to like the splash guys. Probably more, you know, free agent signings to replace failed draft picks than anything else.
Right.
So I think, you know, what people see this franchise is for the first time, just fine and regular. And I think that is a exceptional place to be, especially for the people who cover this team, who have dealt with an unbelievable amount of nonsense for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I keep joking that the happiest day of my life was when I took the Congressional Oversight Committee off my Twitter handle, off notifications. That was a good day.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's so, you know, I'm sure you guys have done this, but think of all the things you had to cover and were important to cover and were important to fans and were important to society that have very little to do with football. And there's been so much of it. I mean, not a lot of calendar shoots, for instance, just to pick a random example, make their way into, you know, news of covering an actual football team and organization. But you guys, and so did I, did it all. And the fact that, you know, you have some time now, the fact that it's quiet, the fact that a lot of questions are answered, right? You have a general manager, you have a coach, you have a, you know, potentially franchise quarterback. Will he be? Will he not be? That's going to play out over the next several years. But, you know, you have a guy, and that's a big deal. It's a team that has some talent. It's just a good, regular, totally fine place to be, which is a dramatic improvement.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Jaden Daniels, and obviously that's the big story now. That is very much football. He'll be at rookie minicamp this weekend. There was a lot of discussion, needless to say, him or Drake May, where's J.J. McCarthy fit? And then up until the combine, Caleb Williams was involved, and then that sort of got put aside with Caleb Williams going to the Bears, seemed pretty locked in. But I'm just curious, as you talk to people around the league, should it have been as much of a slam dunk for the Bears to go with Caleb Williams? Like, is Daniels closer to Williams based on people you thought, or closer to May? Because it feels,
yeah,
some people have more issues with the latter.
So, you know, my general view of the landscape of things, and you're right, I talked to a lot of people. I basically, you know, I go through the same process every year getting ready for the draft. I write down every relevant person in my phone and I call all of them. And some I get, some I don't get, some call back 2 weeks later, some we miss each other. You know, I end up with about, you know, 38 to 40 pages of notes. I think that I have somewhere around there. So it's a lot of stuff. So my sense of sort of the landscape of the league is that most people had Caleb number one. Not all. There was a couple who had Jaden Daniels number one, but most people had Caleb just based on his unbelievable athletic ability, his resume, you know, leadership and the kind of person he is. I know there was the family dad stuff, but, you know, he's probably, I say the dad is a little more pushed to the side now than probably he's ever been as Caleb takes control of his own life and gets his own people around him. A lot of good things happening. So I think that was, it wasn't the unanimous number one, but it was pretty clear.
Right.
And I would say after that, you know, most people felt it was Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and then Drake May and then the rest of them. Now we'll see where that all shakes out. And, you know, you had a couple people who had J.J. McCarthy as the three, but really, like, that was pretty clear divide of Caleb number one, Jaden Daniels 1A, Drake May B, or whatever you would even say, A minus, because I think people thought he was very, very good. And then the others, and, you know, time will tell. I mean, if you had asked me this, you know, during the Josh Allen year, I would have said plenty of people had Josh Allen as the number four, and he's obviously the best of them. So we never know. But it felt like to me, once it was clear Caleb was going one, it was just as clear that Jaden Daniels was going number two. And that's why, you know, there was never a time when I felt like the Commanders would, I guess, even really consider a trade. And I know plenty of teams tried and they basically got a, yeah, we're good. We're just going to take him.
Peter did tell us that, right, like we said, like we really weren't looking to trade, that they felt, he said they felt more confident about Jaden Daniels earlier on than perhaps the outside world knew.
That's
he
right.
Did say one team made a significant offer or a real offer for two. I'm assuming it was Minnesota to get May, but did you ever have any feel for that?
I don't know what if he's referring to a team making a significant offer, I'm not sure which team he'd be referring to, but I got the sense at least the Raiders contacted them, which makes sense. I mean, everyone, you know, if you know Jaden's going number two, that's where you got to get to.
Right.
And I'm sure the Vikings contacted them as well. I think those are the two teams, you know, interested in moving. I never felt like the Raiders would make the kind of, you know, franchise altering trade that it would take, because it would take, you know, you're talking three number ones and like all of the, I mean, an endless array of assets that I think based on the Raiders roster and just mortgaging the future, they're really never going to do. Minnesota probably would have done it. I mean, they were open to two, they were open to three. They ended up moving up just a little bit, but I don't know which one of those franchises it was, but I think both of them called and were at least interested in moving. But like you said, the Commanders never really even considered it.
I would have liked the Vegas rumor more, just because then we could throw in, like, you know, are they going to get the hangover, the suite from the hangover thrown in for lifetime access or, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to like there. And, you know, but I will say this, the fact that, you know, the Commanders have a quarterback that people are willing to come all the way up for is a good sign. You don't know how it's going to work out. I have no idea. But the talent, I think, is very clear.
Sort of an inside baseball question, but I'm interested in. I think others are as well, because I know fans were asking me when we were all saying, and it's not just local, I think national a lot too, with the coaching search and this QB journey, they're not talking. There's not a lot of information coming out of Washington. What does that mean from your perspective when you're hearing things like that? Like, to the, you know, like, because it wasn't like people were saying, even if you thought Jaden Daniels to two, and I obviously pay attention to what you do, but if I miss a report, tell me. But like, it was like everybody was kind of generally saying that I'm reading the tea leaves as this, but not necessarily like sources are saying this. Right. What does that look like from your perspective when you're hearing, we don't know if Washington is going with Ben Johnson or Dan Quinn, or whether they're taking Daniels or May. What does that look like from your end?
Yeah. So first of all, on the draft stuff, I like to stay away from like the, you know, this team with this pick is leaning toward this guy, because I like to be right, and it's too easy to be wrong in the draft. It just is. I mean, you have people who, you know, I don't get a lot of people lie, but you definitely have people who, you know, will dodge or mislead, or it's just, and you know, plus I like the surprise of it, just being totally honest. So I don't do a lot of like Commanders are leaning toward this, or, you know, until it become, I think by the time it got to be draft time, everyone sort of knew. But to answer your question, it seems what the Commanders did in the coaching search, and you're right, I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be Dan Quinn, but like, at least I'll just say for me, I had a pretty good sense it would be Dan Quinn. I had a pretty good understanding of why, but until it was offered and essentially accepted, I didn't know for sure. And I think the reason of that, because they kept a very tight circle, and the only people who knew kept quiet. And I think they enjoyed that. And, you know, that's the reality is, like, as much as I like having the information, and I always do, probably better for a franchise that's trying to get off on the right foot and do things the right way to have it locked down. And I think for the draft, you know, it was similar. I mean, you know, I talk to people in all organizations, and some will say, hey, like, you know, we're probably taking this guy, don't say anything or whatever. And it's like, okay. You know, you talk through why, and you sort of get ready for the draft coverage. When I talked to people with the Commanders, it was like, well, we may be doing this. That's what people think, but Adams kept it really close to the vest. And I think my sense for Adam Peters is, you know, it's his first GM job. It's hopefully his last GM job. He knew how serious this was, and he didn't want to let anything mess it up, and took it extremely seriously. You know, did all the research, talked to people, but kept his own personal decision on where it was going to be very private. And the people who, you know, knew for sure, they weren't talking, which, you know, again, like, as you're trying to represent a professional organization, it's a pretty good way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, we would all like the information. I get why they don't say anything, but it is interesting how in other years, like, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable. I mean, you're right. You don't want to go out on a major limb, because they could go in different positions, different directions. But when they were picking them in the teens, I felt I had a pretty reasonable grasp of Jamin Davis and Emmanuel Forbes could be names. And those are 19 and 16. At two, I was like, I'm like, I don't know exactly. And that's why it felt kind of even weirder than
And you
normal.
know, and this was a complicated one. There were certainly some issues to walk through. So keeping close to the vest and, you know, making sure it was 100% right, nothing wrong with that.
You mentioned Peters. Obviously, this is his first time being a real the main decision maker, the GM, but he obviously had a lot of responsibility in San Francisco, and he was there, of course, when they made the Trey Lance pick, also there when they took Brock Purdy, which helped offset the Trey Lance thing. I don't know what, you know, looking back on that, what lessons you think perhaps Peters took away from that, but knowing what you know, I'm sure you have a good feel for how that Trey Lance situation went down. They traded up. Are they taking Mac Jones? What's happening? Is there anything from there that you think or you've heard that you get a sense that Peters kind of learned from that, or maybe anything else with San Fran that he's now kind of bringing here?
Yeah, I mean, it's that was such a weird year. I mean, the COVID year, I think, presented challenges like no one else had seen. I mean, there were a lot of mistakes that year in draft, in basically everything, really everything in the whole world. There was a lot of mistakes. And that was obviously one of them. That was a bad one. You know, the fact that he basically didn't play all year, the fact that it wasn't, as it turns out, we didn't really know at the time, it really wasn't a very good quarterback group. You know, I think, you know, you'd like to say, well, you know, you learn this lesson when you make this mistake. But the reality is, if the process was good, and I feel like, you know, San Francisco has a good process, they're very professional. They've scouted well, and Adam Peters is a big part of that. You know, and look, they've missed on some first rounders, or sort of like, you know, Javon Kinlaw signed a $7 million deal in free agency. So like, that's not a miss, but it's not as big a hit as you would like. But they've hit in so many other places and so many other rounds that, like, you know, San Francisco is one of the more talented rosters in the NFL. I think they've done fine. So I think as long as the process is good, he's probably fine. The one thing I think it shows all of us really is, when you go all in on someone, whoever it is, generally quarterback, you really have to know. You'll never know, but, you know, that goes to show you have to know.
Right, and that's also partly why with the Daniels thing, I'm like, all right, well, I hear people saying good things, but they know more than I do. They're the ones talking to a coaching, his former coaches, teachers, parents, somebody he went to junior high with, whoever it is, so they're going to get all the information, and we're just, to some degree, speculating on the outside. All right, so I wanted to get to, as I mentioned at the top, you said on Twitter the other day, you put out that you're working or going to help. Well, actually, I don't even know what you told me. You're behind this group WaitUntilEighth.org that's promoting, I guess, kids staying off social media until they get a bit older. Because that was clumsy introduction. Tell me what the organization's about and why you wanted to get involved.
Yeah, so I tweeted in and put on Instagram. I've talked about it a bunch. It's an organization that I basically just started working with. But the reason for that is because it has just become relevant for me. So essentially what it is, Wait Until 8th, it delays, it asks parents to sign a pledge to delay the use of smartphones until at least 8th grade. And the at least part of it is a big part of it because, you know, hopefully it would be longer. Hopefully it'd be as long as, you know, you can feasibly do it. And I think there's a lot of reasons why delaying the use of smartphones is important. And so what the organization is based around is that every kid wants a phone, it seems like. And when one kid has a phone and your kid doesn't, it's sort of like, well, why does this boy get a phone and I don't? So what it tries to do is take the pressure on parents away by getting parents to bind together and all sign a pledge together. And if everyone signs a pledge together, and if everyone, you know, is on the same page with delaying smartphones until at least 8th grade, then the kids can't go, well, why does so-and-so have it and I can't? Because you're all on the same page. And then the reason, you know, why delaying it makes sense. Now, I have a fifth grader who's about to be a sixth grader, and I have a third grader who's about to be a fourth grader. They both have watches, so we can get in touch with them if we need. They can text their friends if they need. But they're not on Instagram, they're not on Twitter, they're not on, you know, YouTube or Snapchat or anything else. And I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, at least to me, it makes sense. Social media is very dangerous, you know, from bullying to, you know, all the bad websites that are out there. And I don't really need to go into them, but things that are not for the eyeballs of impressionable young children. There's studies that show that Kids who are on smartphones sleep less, play outside less, have fewer meaningful relationships, more prone to depression. And there's a lot of good research out there to show why this is a good thing. And I think this organization does a great job of being like, let's come together. And if your neighbor does it and you do it, then it's easier for kids to say, you know what? We don't necessarily need a smartphone right now.
And I just want to, like, I didn't say it's like, this is not one of those like Super Bowl radio road deals where the person comes on to pitch something. I reached out to Ian because I saw it. So this is just to be clear, we're talking about this because I'm interested in this. I don't have kids, but if I'm being honest, I'm basically addicted to my phone. I'm on it. Partly, I justify it saying I have to do it for the job. Well, but like to some degree, that's always the case. But like, I know I went to see a Dave Chappelle concert a couple years ago, and when you go to see some of these bigger name comedians, they take your phone, stick it in this like thing, looks like an eyeglass case, lock it up. You can't get access to it till it's over. I mean, if I had nails, I don't know if I had any when I left. I was constantly fidgeting. Where's my phone? And I'm in theory an adult by age at least, and maybe maturity is another story. And I was like, oh my God. And I know how. I mean, so I have in theory, the skills to equip myself for this and understand what's happening when a lot of these negative things are out there. But if you're a kid, I don't understand how, but not only the addiction part, you don't recognize, but then, like you said, all the other components that go into this, it makes total sense to me. I hope this is one of those topics that as a country, we can figure out how to make sense. Cause everything you read about what's kind of going on in this country, that the phone seems central to a lot of the problems.
Yeah. And I deal with the same stuff, and people will say to me when I put that out, they say, like, well, how could, you know, me who use my phone all the time, how could you be supporting this? And I'm like the perfect person because I see all the evils, right? I see the social media hate, God forbid you misspell a word or you didn't see a text and you tweet a story late or you just flat get beat or, you know, a guy wasn't supposed to play and plays. I see all of it. And all the stuff people would never say in person, they all say online. And I am battle tested and I can deal with all of it. And no sixth or seventh grader or eighth grader should have to deal with any of it. It's hard enough in person, just living your life, let alone your, you know, virtual life. You're right. I mean, I've never been in the Masters. It is for sure on my bucket list, but you can't use your phone. And I'm like, that would be a challenge. Now, to go to the Masters, I will suffer through it. And it is, you know, it's part of our job. So like, you know, getting beat on a story is one thing, but putting your phone away and then a story is reported that you couldn't get to, you know, that is another thing. Like, that sucks. On the other hand, there is life, and you have to live life, and this is part of it. But, you know, I kind of think I'm the perfect person to deal with this because I've seen all the really bad things associated with smartphones.
Last question. I know you need to run out. I appreciate the time. But to this point, so you're talking about broad, this campaign is a broad one about all kids. But in terms of the world that we inhabit with the NFL, these 6th, 7th, 8th year olds eventually become the ones who go towards the NFL, eventually become college standouts, they become pros. And, you know, there was a lot of talk with Caleb Williams this year that, like, he's like the first, like, I don't know, is it Gen Z, loose track, but like the first of this generation's quarterback.
The first, like, true NIL quarterback, yeah.
Right, that there's some, like, differences that, like, you know, maybe we collectively have to adjust to. And I imagine social media is part of that. So, like, do you notice either through your own dealings or talking to teams how teams are viewing how players use social media and the way that it's changed either their, you know, the personalities of these kids, the work habits, things like that?
For sure. I mean, I would say 5 years ago, if you said to me, it's a good example. Okay. A player unfollowed a team on Instagram.
Right.
I'd be like, okay, great. Thanks. Who cares? Why would I care about that? Now, not only is it legitimately news, but it's something that can be important, right? Like, social media is a way that people express themselves. I do it. The reason I'm on here is because I use social media to promote a cause I believe in. If you're a player and you have something to say and you want to put it out your own way, you know, you could stand there and tell media in the locker room. I prefer that as a member of the media, but you can also take to social media and do it if you want. Like, you know, for instance, you know, there are players who some wanted to announce their own contracts. I mean, I knew when I had the Amon-Ra St. Brown contract during draft week that he very badly wanted to put out a video he wanted to be the one to tell his fans that he was staying, which we had a nice laugh about this when I saw him at the Kentucky Derby this past week. But that's, and so he, you know, I agreed to wait out of respect for him. So he hit the video and then I hit my story. But to me, this is all okay. Players deserve a right to have their own say. They deserve a right to have their opinion heard, and they can do it how they want. And social media is the vehicle for that. And teams know. So I think no longer they're like, oh, well, it's Twitter. What, you know, you can't believe anything you read on Twitter. It's like, these are players' voices and they are real, and they get the opportunity to say what they want.
Yeah, no, absolutely, for sure. Well, congrats on going to the Kentucky Derby. I know you're into horse racing, but that's on my, that and the Masters are very, very high on my bucket list. So very, very jealous you got to do that. Ian, great pleasure. I really appreciate the time. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you follow Ian on X or Twitter already, but at Rapsheet, NFL.com, the NFL Network. He's all over those places. Ian, really appreciate it, and good cause. And hopefully people are paying attention.
All right. Thank you, man. We really appreciate you having me. Good chatting, too.
All right. Thanks to Ian for his time. I, you know, look, obviously we're a little bit past the draft, and some of what went on in the draft no longer matters, right? It doesn't really matter if the world thinks Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels are equal, one is better than the other. Everybody's got their team, everybody's moving on, and that's what it is. But I find it fascinating what's going on behind the scenes, what's going on, how did we get to these points? And I appreciated Ian sharing some insight into what it looks like from his seat as a national insider. And I enjoyed that, and hopefully everybody will. If you have, you do what you got to do as a parent, of course. I'm not here to judge, especially as a non-parent. But I think that social media phone cause is a notable one, and I do think it is, you know, for this country in general. I see it certainly in my own life, friends, family, those with kids. I know the phone is a huge deal, and it is, there's obviously this TikTok conversation going on at Capitol Hill, et cetera. So it's a topic of the day, and I saw that it was Ian, of all people, discussing it. Obviously, there's other reasons to bring him on, so I thought it was a good way to have him jump on with us. All right, we're going to get to Mikey Sanders still here in a moment. Just as a heads up for this one, literally, he just got into town, just got settled into his new place, near the facility, I presume. So new, in fact, he doesn't even have Wi-Fi yet. So the audio on his end was a little spotty, but hopefully not such a big deal for everybody here. Again, I enjoyed getting to learn more about him, and he was a good sport to go through his evaluation from Dane Brugler. And, you know, there wasn't too much to criticize, because obviously he's a pretty impressive young player. So here we go. Conversation with Washington Commanders second round pick Mikey Sanderstil, new cornerback for this defense. All right. We have talked plenty, plenty, plenty about the draft here on the podcast, written about it a ton for The Athletic. Now we're going to actually get to talk to somebody that we've been writing and talking about. Mikey Sanderstil, cornerback, formerly Michigan Wolverines, now a member of the Washington Commanders, or at least, I don't know if you signed your contract yet, but you will be any minute now. Mikey, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the DMV. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for the intro. But, you know, it's been definitely exciting times, I could say. But, you know, finally feels good to be down here in my new home in, VA, in the DMV, I should say. I'm just ready to get things going. Rookie minicamp starts this week, so I'm just excited to get the ball rolling and just, you know, meet my new teammates, get comfortable with my new staff. But to answer your question, I'm doing great.
Oh, well, good. You mentioned the DMV. I'm sure that's something you just sort of learned as people were saying it. I haven't moved in a long time myself, but when I did, you know, you have to figure out what are the sayings, what are people doing? Is that part of the fun here, is figuring out a whole new, not just the football part, but a whole new community that you're going to be part of for a while?
No, I've definitely known what the DMV was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
okay.
I'm from I have a few play teammates, former teammates that were on or that are from the DMV area. So I definitely knew what that meant. I'm kind of, I think I know for the most part what the lingo is. One of my closest friends is from DC, so I think I'm pretty familiar with the language, so I'm good on that side. Of course, there's going to be more I learn and whatnot. Just being a local now, I should say. But I definitely gotta tap into the food spots and figure out, what's good places to eat, good places to just hang out and just, kick my feet at, all of those things. But as time goes, I'm gonna learn more and more daily. So just excited for all of it.
Yeah, well, look, you've got some, there's been a ton of change in the locker room. So I almost have to think to myself, what are the veterans in your room? But, guys have been around. I'm sure they'll point you in the right directions. So I was saying to you right before we started, I know you've done a few different interviews in town already, and it's a lot of the, get to know you type of questions. And I thought, okay, let me try to see if we could do something a little bit different here. And I mentioned to you that our NFL draft insider, Dane Brugler, writes a really comprehensive draft guide. Writes deep profiles on all the prospects. I've got yours in front of me. And I was like, let's go through yours and get to know you through Dane Brugler's evaluation profile of you. You said cool, so we're gonna go through that. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. All right. So first off, this is how like in depth it is. It's not just about your football stuff. He's got on here. You're the middle child of three. You've got an older brother and a younger sister. You were born in Haiti, but then your family moved to the US and settled in the Boston area around 2000. Needless to say, I don't imagine you remember much of Haiti. But what did you, I don't even know how much you know of your own parents' journey. I assume a fair amount. What when you kind of figured out what your parents did, that they moved presumably to because there was some unrest in the country to give you and your siblings a better life. What did you kind of make of that, of their choice? It's pretty brave to have to make that kind of move.
I'm definitely super thankful that, they were brave enough to take a chance. Even though, they were leaving a bad situation, they took a chance on coming to a country where they knew nobody. They weren't familiar with anything, a country where they would have to go and learn a completely different language and start a whole new way of living. I'm definitely super thankful that they took the chance, and I'm, being a child of theirs, I'm proud of them to for what they did of taking that chance to come here. And so, again, I'm thankful, I'm appreciative, and I'm glad that they were able to do that because them doing that gave not only myself but them and my siblings an opportunity. So, it worked out.
Does that I don't know what your parents are like. I'm happy to hear, but like does that spirit that they had to come to this country, is that for you and your siblings, do you think that's something that's inherited, that's part of even though you were technically there, you were 3 months, but but even though it's their journey, that's sort of the spirit of the family that's helped lead you to play not just at a high level of college and then get to the pros, is there something there?
You said, is there something where?
Like, is there just the connection between your parents doing that? Is that, do you see that sort of own spirit in your own life, and your siblings' lives?
Yeah, definitely. Just the, for me, at least I can say, is like just the embodying what sacrifice looks like. Putting others first, because what my parents did was they put the family first. And so, I've always grown up putting other people first, and I feel like what I do is much bigger than just myself. So, I definitely embody that, embody, sacrifice and, just always being there for others and, taking care of others. And then just the chip on my shoulder to work hard. And, I come from a family that works very hard. My parents work very hard. They did then, they do now. So, I'm never gonna find myself in a situation where I'm satisfied until I know that my parents are good. Because, for everything that they've done for us, I feel like in my position, the only way I could, you know, return that favor, not favor, but pay them back is by being successful and showing them that, you know, you guys didn't come here for no reason. You guys didn't, you know, take that chance for no reason. And I feel like that's, you know, part of my mission, and that's part of what I why I do what I do.
All right, I like that. As I mentioned, you well, you know, but your family settled in the Boston area. That's where you grew up. Did you grow up rooting for any of those teams specifically, or all those teams, none of those teams? You know, Red Sox, Patriots, et cetera.
Yeah, I've been a Boston sports fan my whole entire life.
So there's been a lot of Tom Brady going on the last couple weeks. There was the Apple series. You know, the Dynasty. I don't have Apple TV, so I didn't watch it. There was the comedy roast the other night of Tom Brady. Do you pay attention to any of that stuff, or if so, what do you think?
No, I didn't even know. I saw like memes and stuff, and you know, some backlash about it. I had no clue that that was even a thing. I kind of didn't really pay attention to it,
All
but
right,
yeah,
well,
I heard about it.
the comedy roast, I've only seen some of it. Depending on your humor, it's worth it, but there's all tons of, you know, Brady jokes all over the place. What did you have a favorite player on those teams growing up?
I was a big, you know, I'm gonna give a shout out to my guy Ty Law. Ty Law, Asante Samuel. I became a big Malcolm Butler fan. You know, he saved our Super Bowl.
Sure.
You know, I was fans of guys like Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, Randy Moss. Shoot, I mean, I could go on and on about all the Patriots guys that, you know, I enjoyed watching.
The fact that Julian Edelman
Hey,
played a
the
little,
list goes on.
yeah, sorry, I was gonna say the fact that Julian Edelman played just a little bit, played both ways a little bit. And Troy Brown did as well. Is there, you're a guy that started as a receiver, transitioned in college to corners. That do those two way guys have a little extra space for you, in your fandom?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just guys that I'm, you know, similar to. Just, you know, kind of the Swiss Army knife package type of guys. I feel like, you know, that's the category I fall in. So yeah, I definitely have a huge appreciation for those guys' game.
So while you're there, you became a prep star in high school. You're like the Gatorade player of the year in the state. Your high school team, right? You won state titles when you were in your sophomore and junior years, and almost got back again as a senior. You're getting recruited by the schools. Did you? I guess with if it wasn't then or later, at what point did you think to yourself, "Hey, the NFL is an actual shot"? Was it maybe just not until you got to college? But when did you start thinking, "Hey, this is not just fun. This is something I can maybe really do"?
I mean, I knew the vision became a lot more clear as I became older, but I think ever since I was a little kid, it's what I dreamed of doing. It's what I set my mind to do. So, you know, just consistently working, praying, and you know, doing everything necessary to get myself to where I am, along with, you know, the help of many people who, you know, played a factor into who I am, what I do. I think the vision's always been there for me.
Okay, I'm gonna skip past some of the Michigan stuff for the moment. But at the combine, you ran a 4.47, pretty good time there. Were you happy with that time? Or did you think you left some tenths of a second that you could have gotten a little faster? What do you think of that time?
I definitely think my time was good. I know I definitely ran faster than a lot of people thought I was gonna. I do think I could have ran a little faster. Got the time down some, but you know, my number was my number. I was okay with it. I didn't want to go back out there and potentially hurt my time by, you know, running slower. So you know, I got my number back and I was okay with it.
I don't even know if I mean the 40 obviously matters when you're defensive back for the obvious reasons, but like, are there other numbers, whatever it is, vertical, broad, three cone, et cetera, that for you, the way the position is or the way you play, that you think kind of or more representative of the type of player that you are, the type of skills that you bring to the situation?
Definitely, you know, the change of direction drills like the L cone, the 5-10-5, just showing that lateral quickness in the change of direction. And then, you know, like vert and broad show how explosive you are. To me, realistically, those are more important than the 40 is because you're hardly ever running a straight line. The only time you're running and reaching your max, your max miles per hour as a DB is if you're chasing somebody, and that could be, you're losing a rep, or you know, you, like I said, you got beat, or you're chasing somebody down trying to go save a touchdown. Other than that, you're never in a scenario where you're gonna run straight line. So I think you know there's definitely other things that are, in my opinion, more important than the 40, but it definitely feels good to go out there and you.
Yeah, I got the okay. There you are. Sorry. All right, cool. Yeah, no, I totally right. You're right. The 40 is what we all talk about because it's just shows pure speed. But in terms of the actual game, it's not exactly something that is being used all the time, like you said. All right, let me get to some of the strengths category here that Dane's got. Starts with controlled athlete with foot quickness and clean coverage transitions, former wide receiver, and it shows the way he tracks and aggressively attacks the football in the air. Notes he had 6 interceptions last year. The receiver turned corner, you had a big interception in the national title game. How much, I'm sure you loved playing receiver, how much do you feel that that is an advantage for you, knowing that you had got that experience tracking the balls? Probably have a feel for where the quarterbacks are looking. How much of an advantage do you think that is for your game?
It plays a huge factor. You know, just from tracking ball, I feel like it's something that I've had a lot of practice and a lot of reps at. So up to this point, it's became, second nature. But again, it's still one of those things that I constantly work at. You know, I can always get better and improve at tracking the ball. So just because I'm used to it doesn't mean I have to stop working at it. And then, being able to anticipate routes and concepts, having the receiver, background definitely helps me because, I know what routes I could get, certain situations, I know what type of routes I could get, and certain, splits, I know what type of routes I could get depending on who I'm covering and where on the field, as well as what formation the offense is in. Certain formations are 2-man routes, certain formations are 3-man routes. And then you have your max pro formations. And then, I understand when teams are window dressing and trying to disguise looks. But at the end of the day, they're getting back to the same thing. They might motion somebody in, motion somebody out. Just understanding that when I was on offense, the way they would motion myself as a slot receiver in motion, other guys like AJ Giles, move us around, but also get back to the same exact stuff that we were doing. But all of that plays a role into, how I am when it comes to, reading offenses. Then the last thing is just being confident. At the end of the day, everything's confident. You can know as much as you want. If you're not confident, then, it serves you no good. So I definitely believe knowing the game helps me be confident, but you still need that confidence regardless of how much you know.
And at your position, right? I mean, one play, guy gets behind you, everybody sees it, everybody notices it. At that position, you've got to have that short-term memory and that confidence to believe that you can, that you can be that guy, whether you're on an island or in the zone, right? I mean, that if you don't have, you got to have confidence for all these things, but if at your spot in particular, it's going to be a rough time if you don't. Did I lose you there for a second?
Yeah, you might have. I said, yeah, I agree.
Okay, gotcha. All right, let's see what else he says in here. He says that you cleverly balance your eyes between quarterback and receiver to decipher route combinations. Okay, does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I would say there's in zone, in zone coverages, you want to be able to read the quarterback, read his eyes. you don't want to, you know, give up what's behind you and bite down on what's in front of you. So there's that. And then in man coverage, I still, you know, am continuously working on my eye discipline, making sure, you know, I'm not peeking in the backfield, because if you're watching the quarterback throw the ball, that means you're going to be watching the receiver catch it. That's one thing we talked about in my room, and I think that's just DB language universally. So I'm still, you know, working on that, trying to get out of the habit of finding the quarterback in man coverage. But I do believe that there also is a balance. You know, guys like Trayvon Diggs, who, shoot, his eyes are always in the backfield. He makes plays on the football, though. You know, he's a ball hawk. So, you know, some guys can do it, but some guys can't. I think I do agree that I have a balance of, you know, being able to read the route and read the quarterback at the same time. But it could bite me at times. So I'm still working on that.
All right. Well, look, that rookie camp's coming up, OTAs, then training camp. You got, this is the whole point of the offseason, right? Keep working on your game, and it's a never ending quest for those who strive for greatness, for sure. All right, let me see what else to say. Okay, so it talks about you're a 2-time team captain, described as a player, coach, and influencer by the Michigan coaching staff. There's a quote in here by Steve Klinkscale, who I guess was the Michigan DB coach when you were there. It says here, quote, "Mikey has changed the mindset of everybody on our team. He's easy to be drawn to." Leadership, is that when people talk about you being a leader, I guess, what does that mean to you, and how do you become a leader?
I think you become a leader by putting the work in, earning the respect of your peers. I believe that when you do it that way, you become much easier to follow. And to become a leader, you have to follow a leader. So you have to know how to be led in order to lead others. And, you know, when I came in, I got around the guys who've been in the program. You know, I wanted to learn from them. I wanted to learn the ins and outs of the program. I wanted to learn everything. That was from, you know, the five stars to the walk-ons. I wanted to know everything. Got around those guys. I worked. I earned their respect first. And then as the years went on, I continued to earn the respect of the guys in my class and the guys younger than me. And ultimately, you know, they voted me captain. And, you know, that's the greatest honor I believe you can get as a football player, is to be chosen as a captain by your peers, because those guys see who you are day in, day out. They know how much you work. They know what you're about. They see how you conduct your business. So, you know, to be voted by my teammates captain, I'm a forever cherish that. And then what it means to me to be a leader is just, you know, guys view as somebody they can lean on to, and when, you know, when things are good, when things are bad, they can come to you. And again, you know, they're gonna want to see what you do first. So I appreciate that my teammates view me as a leader.
Did the team talk to you about sort of that team captain being a leader? It was an obvious point for them that, I believe, of the 9 draft picks, 7 of you guys are team captains. And this team, you know, it's going through a recalibration, as Dan Quinn says, if you haven't heard it already, off a 4-win season. They're changing the roster. They brought in a lot of vets, and now some of you guys as rookies who have that leadership component. Did they talk to you about that? The how much they like that part of your overall skill set?
Yeah, they you know, they told me that's what they're expecting me to be, is someone who's going to come in and not be afraid to lead. They want me to bring that part of my game to the program. You know, and I let them know that I'm not going to be afraid to do exactly that. I want to be a leader. So, you know, I'm going to go in, I'm going to prove myself on the field, I'm going to work. I think, again, that's where it starts for me, is, you know, you put the work in and earn the respect, and then naturally people are going to gravitate towards you. So my whole mindset is just going and work.
I get it. I can see that. All right, you ready for the weaknesses category?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First point it made, and I know this is something you've heard. It just talks about your size. You're 5'9", 182 at the combine. you've dealt with this your whole career, I'm sure probably your whole life, in terms of being one of maybe perhaps one of the shorter guys out there. How have you used that as, do you see that as, oh, you can't do anything about your size, but how do you offset that if that's the right way to use it? How do you maybe try to use it to your advantage, or is it motivation? What do you kind of think when people bring up your height?
I don't pay attention to it. I just go out there. I play fast. I play physical. Again, knowing the game helps me play much faster than, you know, a lot of people. So I use my size to my advantage. I could get around blocks easier. I use my speed. You know, it's definitely not easy for a 6'5", 6'6", lineman to block a 5'9", guy coming off the edge when I'm blitzing. So, you know, I use that to my advantage. I use, you know, my short area quickness, my lateral movement, I think is perfect for the position that I play. So, you know, you say my size is my weakness. I say my size is my biggest strength.
Perfect answer. Now I see why all the scouts have said nothing but great things about you. That's a great answer for sure. He says, now he mentions in the strength part, that you're a more than willing tackler and you can get after it. But obviously, same sort of thing when you're, you know, not the biggest guy out there. You know, sometimes that can take some guts to go after some of these guys, or sometimes it just, you know, can be more challenging. What's your sort of general approach when it comes to tackling these bigger guys? How do you kind of throw yourself in there to make the plays?
Just do it. I'm protected. I got pads on. Just do it. You know what I mean? Like, sacrifice your body for your teammates. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. It also mentions, obviously, you've only played 2 years on defense because you were a receiver. I don't know if that's so much I guess it's like more of an immediate quote unquote weakness rather than a long-term one you're going to play and you'll get past that. But the fact that you have only played 2 years at corner on defense, was that something that teams kind of were asking about? What's your, you know, how has it been to learn that position? What's, you know, get a feel for your trajectory?
I think for me, the success I've been able to have in just 2 years brings a lot of excitement to what I can do in the future. I think there's a lot of upside and my ceiling is very high. I'm super happy that I get to get coached by Coach Quinn and his staff, because they're known to develop guys. You know, they've coached some of the best. So I'm just super ready to get in there, get with them, and just learn and be, you know, a student of the game, be a sponge to all the knowledge, and just, you know, take every piece of information they could possibly give me and add it into my game.
They've talked about, it sounds like the plan is to use you in the slot, but also we know Dan Quinn's defenses, they use people in different spots. You've certainly played outside of Michigan. Do you have a feel, I guess, as to how they see you and you know, what your kind of role may look like?
I do believe they're probably using me primarily in the slot, but I'm be ready to be used, you know, outside, safety. You know, maybe one day they're feeling good and want to put me on offense. So, but, you know, wherever they want me is, you know, to play, I'm going to play and I'm going to, you know, do what's asked of me. So.
Well, look, you know, you had, I was told by multiple people that you had one of the, by scouts, like that you had one of the better pro days they saw from anybody this cycle. Now, the team we knew was there in part because obviously Michigan had a ton of guys that went pro, but JJ McCarthy and the quarterback, but you were out there not just playing, you were playing receiver, you were running routes. Somebody told me you were the best receiver there that day, despite the fact that you're a corner. How much do you think that even if they don't necessarily view you as guys can play receiver at all, how much do you think showing that ability helped impress Adam Peters and others?
You know, that this guy's a football player. I think that's what they're just doing that shows.
Gotcha. All right. Last thing, this wasn't listed under strength. This was under your bios. It says here that you sing and play multiple instruments. Is that accurate? What do you play?
That was accurate. When I was younger, I sang in the church choir, and I played drums, violin, piano, and a little bit of guitar.
You still do any of those?
Nah, I sing.
Okay. Well, you know how
I
these
sing, things. You know, music. but.
Well, I was going to say, you know how these things go. There's going to be some sort of a rookie talent show or something up there. You have a sense. I don't know how that, if they're going to make you do something. You just have to pick something. Do you have a song in mind if they make you sing? That I mean, hopefully they're not listening to these podcasts and they don't blow your cover so they don't know that you can sing. But like, do you have a plan in place or a song that you think you'd be you ready to knock out?
I'm not sure yet. And the good thing about singing is I could kind of, you know, manipulate the situation and, you know, change the genre up. So I'm not using high pitched notes and whatnot. So we'll see what happens.
Got it. All right. Well, look, Mikey, I really appreciate the time and the insight and your willingness to me for me to read you off some of the strengths and so-called weaknesses that Dane had down in your profile. Look, you've obviously it's been impressive. I mean, I didn't even ask you about when you hear that Nick Saban says you might be pound for pound the best guy in the draft, and then other people have come out and said a lot of nice things. On the one hand, I'm sure that's great to hear. On the other hand, I also imagine you maybe don't want to hear any of it because you've got a job to do and it's come out here and play well for the Commanders.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate what you know, Coach Saban said. That's a hell of a coach, legendary coach, one of the best ever coaches in football. So, you know, hear someone like him, you know, make a statement like that. In my opinion, like Coach Saban knows what he's talking about if he has that opinion to make. That's not even about, like, if he would have said that about anybody, I think that's something like, oh, you know, let me really see what this guy's about. Because someone like Coach Saban wouldn't just say that. You know what I mean? So I think if he believes that, then he really means it. And again, I'm super thankful that he did say that. I definitely, you know, hopefully someday could sit down with a coach like Coach Saban and just talk football and just see how he views the game and learn from him. Because again, I want to be a student of the game and a sponge to all the knowledge I can get about the game of football. So again, I'm very thankful and appreciative of the words that he said and the statement he made about me.
Yeah, look, if it were me, I probably would like get those words on, put it on a t-shirt, or I'd put it on a poster, or get a bumper sticker. Nick Saban thinks I'm really good. Like, I would do a lot of that stuff. And I really wouldn't, but that is, you can't get a better compliment than that for sure. Mikey, I really, again, really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you out on the field actually this weekend. And look forward to chatting some more over the next, over the year.
Sounds good. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me.
All right. Big thanks both to Ian Rappaport and Mikey Sanderstall for their time. Look forward to watching Mikey going forward here. You know, as I said with him, it isn't just the ability, the corner cover ability, the willingness to take on a bigger, much bigger bodies than his, but there is something about this leadership component. We know they drafted 7 of their 9 picks were team captains. Some of their UDFAs were as well. This is, you know, it goes back to the point I've been making from the beginning. All their moves are about 2025, not 2024. But what the 2024 part is starting to set that tone to reestablish what it means to be a commander. And guys like, you know, Sanders still is only a rookie. So it's not like he's going to be come in and be the rah-rah guy off the bat. But like he said, it's how he comports himself, how he goes about his business that people will notice. And if that's being viewed positively, which based on his career, you would think that's going to be the case, then that's how he starts to become one of the leaders of this team. And, you know, the core, this draft class in particular is, you know, if they can turn things around, it'll be viewed most likely as, you know, part of that group that was able to do that. And that's helped do that. And that's why drafting of the team captains, it can sound hokey and it could even be hokey, but it also can be important because if the goal is to do more than just simply try to win some games, as Josh Harris said weeks ago, it's not that complicated to get to, you know, 500. And I don't think he's wrong about that. The complicated part is getting over that and staying there and do it year after year. We see some teams are able to, the Chiefs right now, the Eagles are typically up there and a handful of others, the Bills. But in general, it's not that easy to do, and especially it's all about the approach. And you know, that's why for me, we'll see how the picks turn out, but their approach so far has been impressive, and I've generally agreed with what they've done in free agency and the draft. because they're focusing on the long haul, not just trying to get a quick fix, even though I think we all want to see a fun team. Certainly Josh Harris wants to see a team you guys want to pay money to see. And as a reporter, I would enjoy covering some successful teams, for sure. All right, that's it for now. Ben Standage signing off. I really appreciate everybody checking out the podcast and The Athletic. Until next time.